Hi, this is Avish Parashar, and welcome to Improv Comedy for Speakers. In this audio program, what we're going to do is explain to you how and why improv comedy is one of the most powerful tools you can use to improve your presentation skills. In addition, I'm going to share with you two improv comedy games that you can start playing immediately to help you develop your own skills. Now, these two games and this entire audio program is really just a subset of a much larger program called Improv for Speakers, the DVD version. And on that, we have 20 improv games that you can not only hear, but watch and see how they're played. And the website for that is improvforspeakers.com. So you can check that out. It gives a lot more in-depth information. But in this audio program, you're going to learn plenty of great stuff to help you immediately start becoming a better speaker. Now, in order to make sure that I don't miss anything, rather than just me droning on into the microphone, I've asked my friend and fellow improviser, Mike Wirth, to interview me and ask me a series of questions, and he'll also be able to ask me questions that maybe I had not anticipated if something needs more clarification. Now, in addition to being a good friend and someone I've done improv with for about 10 years, Mike is also a great sound engineer and music composer. And his website is MikeWorthMusic.com. If you need any kind of music needs, be sure to check out MikeWorthMusic.com. So with that introduction, I'm going to turn things over to Mike, and he can begin interviewing me to help you learn how you can use improv comedy to be a better speaker.
Oh, thank you, Avish.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that kind plug for my website. Avish, I'd like to start the interview specifically asking a question. Why would one use improv comedy as a tool for speakers?
Well, that's a very good question. Many people probably would never think of improv comedy. And the first thing everyone has to realize is what exactly improv comedy is. When you hear improv, a lot of people think of stand-up comedy because of the old Evening at the Improv. And that's where a comic takes a mic and rattles off a series of jokes he's memorized in advance. That's not what I'm talking about. That's stand-up comedy, not improv. In improv, usually a group of performers take the stage with nothing prepared in advance, and then they use audience suggestions to make up things on the spot. So examples of this are the TV show Whose Line Is It Anyways, and there are a few other TV shows and things out there. So it's a very different animal. And improv comedy is one of the most powerful tools you can use because at its core, to be a great improviser, you have to be yourself. The really good improv schools and classes show you how to tap into who you are and let that come out on the stage. Now, this is a very powerful way of learning it. The mistake a lot of speakers make is they'll go to an acting class because they'll feel that they need to learn how to perform better on stage. Or there are even a lot of speech coaches that teach things like very specific gestures and how to breathe and how to move. The problem is with acting and speech coaches and that sort of thing is it shows you how to put on a persona that is not who you are. It makes you wooden. It makes you unauthentic. Whereas with improv comedy, the primary goal is to get you to be yourself in a performance capacity, which is exactly what the best speakers in the world do, is they just be themselves. Now, when you hear the words improv comedy, there's two words, improv and comedy. So obviously, if you use improv comedy as a tool, you will learn how to improvise, which means you'll be able to flow at the unexpected. And any speaker who's given more than one presentation can tell you that things will go wrong, your time will get cut, you'll forget your notes, you'll lose your place, someone will interrupt you. So, by the very nature of improvisation, with that training, you're able to flow with these unexpected things. Mm-hmm. Now, comedy obviously means we're going to be funny. And unless your goal is to put your audience to sleep, the ability to be comedic and be funny is a very powerful thing. Even if your goal is not to make the audience laugh, even if you're doing a straight technical presentation, that ability to tap into your own natural humor and comedic power would be very beneficial to you. So improv comedy in that ways helps you a lot as well. And finally, there's a lot more to it. It's not just about flowing with the unexpected, and it's not just about being funny. Improv helps you in all aspects of speaking. Because if you've ever seen an improv comedy show, people are up there and they're talking to an audience, which means that you are practicing every element of delivery, from vocal variety to acting out, to affecting a little bit of characters, which can come into handy, to projecting your voice. Every element of delivery is practiced when you do improv comedy. Your stage presence, Because not only are you performing, but sometimes you're talking directly to the crowd, which is what a speaker does. Your presence is improved. Your storytelling abilities. The best improvers don't just make up jokes, but they build scenes.
Right, create narrations.
Exactly, and those have beginnings, middle, and ends, which is the key to storytelling. And finally, to do improv, you have to create. By definition, you have nothing prepared, so you're learning how to develop your creativity, which helps you flow with the unexpected, but also helps you build content for your speeches.
Right.
So pretty much anything you do as a speaker, those skills are all developed when you practice improv comedy.
That makes a lot of sense. And then, of course, conversely, when you see a speaker get up who might be lacking or a bit shaky in one of these areas, oftentimes it's because they're trying to put an ill-fitting suit on themselves, so to speak. They've used an acting class to put a structure, which really isn't them. It's better for them to just kind of let themselves be their own expression. And the way to do that is
exactly. I have seen coaches, I've been to like workshops and things, and everyone gets captured in this world of technique. And they want to learn techniques, and people want to teach techniques, because mentally it's much easier to take someone else's techniques than it is to be yourself. But they're so easy to spot. They look so fake. They look like they're not being themselves. And a lot of times, these people look uncomfortable because they're not being themselves.
Right. Again, the ill-fitting suit, you know?
Exactly. Great analogy.
Now, here's the thing, Avish, because I agree with that. And we've all seen that a speaker who is putting on another set of persona has reduced its effectiveness. But I have seen people who have done improv for years, but they also have trouble speaking, or their speaking is not exceptional. If improv is so great for speakers, what might cause that? Why is that so?
Well, that's a great question, and it's important to know that the mere act of practicing improv comedy doesn't necessarily make you a great speaker, even though I think improv is the best tool for it. It really comes down to how you train and how you think about the process. Number one, just like a lot of people want to improve speaking by learning a lot of techniques, a lot of people want to learn improv by running out and learning a lot of techniques. And I've seen classes and teachers who just teach techniques, and they never get into that level of teaching you how to be yourself and how to let that come out. So a lot of it's in how you train. And the other element is how you're choosing to think about applying your training, because you need to make that connection of, okay, this is something I'm doing in improv. Here's how this could apply for me as a speaker. So you need to not only train properly, but apply that training properly. And if you train in improv, a lot of times you're not trained in the best way. I'm not going to be too insulting. You might not be trained in what I consider to be the most effective way, and most improv groups aren't set up to try to treat you to be a better speaker.
Right, right. So what you're saying is not only do you need to be able to get a quality improv background, but you also need to be able to either have a mentor or through yourself translate those skills over and see how they apply. Just like you're doing running tires in football, and you're doing it to increase your leg strength, but you then need to translate that into agility in a football game.
Exactly, and you need to be taught how to do it properly.
Right.
So when you combine all those things, then, you know, the listener here needs to take it upon themselves to find the right kind of improv group and to then make the connection of how to apply that,
right,
which is obviously what the entire Improv for Speakers program is designed to do.
Right. That makes perfect sense. So if I can follow that, if we had a person who wanted to take some of their improv skill and work on it at home, maybe they couldn't find a mentor or a group. Do you have an example of a game that people can use to improve their speaking skills while they're practicing their improv?
Yes, absolutely. And as I said, I have about a repertoire of about 50 to 100 exercises I know, and I use about 20 specifically in the Improv for Speakers program. What I want to do right now is demonstrate one that is really one of the cornerstone exercises. It's one I use for multiple things. It's one of the most powerful exercises you can use to help you become a better speaker. It's something called the expert interview. And the way this works is I'm going to be the world's leading expert on some topic. And then I'm going to let you, Mike, ask me questions on that topic.
Right.
Now, it's not going to be a topic I'm necessarily an expert on. And it's probably going to be a topic you don't normally find any expert on.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter, because you're going to ask me questions. I'm just going to have to go ahead and answer them. And when you ask me questions, to make it a little more challenging, you're going to ask me more difficult questions, in that you're not going to ask me yes or no questions, because it's too easy for me to get off the hook, say yes or no. Don't even ask me questions that start with what or how many, because the question is like, well, how many people do this? It's easier for me just to give a one-word answer or a two-word answer, like 10,000. So you're going to ask me open-ended questions that start with the words how or why. You can ask me to tell you a story about something. You can even ask questions that don't make a lot of sense. And it's going to be upon me to try to make some sense out of it.
Right.
So to start with, Mike, what I want you to do is assign me a topic to be an expert on.
Sure. I'm going to do something that might not be an ordinary topic. So I want you to be an expert on Rice-A-Roni.
Okay, so I am a Rice-A-Roni expert. And now, again, I'm going to ask you to ask me any questions you want on Rice-A-Roni. And my goal is to answer them as if I know exactly what you're talking about and as if I am the world's leading expert on Rice-A-Roni.
Right.
So whenever you're ready, you can start asking me questions.
Okay. Mr. Parisher, in regards to Rice-A-Roni, who was the first person who ate a bowl of Rice-A-Roni, and under what conditions did he do so?
Well, it's funny because it's actually disputed who first bit into the Rice-A-Roni, because it was just this big jumbled mess, and there was two guys. One was Mr. Rice and one was Mr. Roni, and they both bit into it at the same time, and there was a long clan war over who got the rights, and so they finally decided to combine the names, and that's how it got the name Rice-A-Roni.
Oh, that makes perfect sense, actually. And what period of time and what place in America did this happen?
Oh, this happened in 1776, right during the Revolution. So it was very exciting, because this was when they were holed up trying to fight off the British, and there was very little food left, and that's why the two of them were both fighting for this one bowl of food at the same time.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Okay, so it started in the Revolutionary War. How did it then become the San Francisco treat?
Oh, well, people got so fed up with Mr. Rice and Mr. Roni fighting and feuding that they kicked them out of the East Coast and forced them to move west. And these were actually two of the primary settlers of the West Coast. And they went all the way to San Francisco, and then they couldn't go any further, so they settled there. And since they were the first ones there, they made it their town, which is why it's a San Francisco treat.
That makes perfect sense, actually. So what are two of the main secret ingredients that make Rice-A-Roni so delicious?
Well, one of the ingredients is fennel, because Mr. Rice came from the land of fennel, and it adds that great, robust flavor. Mm-hmm. And the other ingredient is rice, which, oddly enough, was introduced by Mr. Roni, which caused a lot more confusion.
Yeah, I can understand that, actually. So if I could just ask one more question about this, actually. What's the current state of political climate for Rice-A-Roni? Is it a Republican or a Democratic-type food?
Well, right now it's libertarian, because it kind of considers itself – Rice-A-Roni considers itself socially Democratic but financially Republican.
Oh.
Because since Rice-A-Roni is from San Francisco, it's very liberal, mm-hmm. but because it is a form of capitalism and it's sold, it wants to get the good tax laws.
Ah, yes, that makes perfect sense. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Parishar, for that quick and but thorough introduction to Rice-A-Roni.
Ah, well, thank you very much. All right, thanks a lot, Mike. That was a great line of questioning.
Rice-A-Roni would be proud. this is a fantastic game. If somebody was to play that at home, you've had a lot of experience. Both of us have had a lot of experience playing that game. When people are starting out, what should they be thinking of? What tips do you have for them to enable them to get the most out of this game when they try it at home?
Well, the primary thing is they absolutely have to first understand what the point of this game is. The point of this game is not to be funny. Don't try to be funny. If you try to be funny, 9 times out of 10, you won't be. Especially if you're new to this. The goal of this game is to answer the questions immediately and without hesitation. Mike, you probably noticed that whenever you asked me a question, I answered it immediately. I didn't stop to think. A novice improviser, and people listening who've never played this will feel tempted to do this, will pause when they hear the question, even if just for a second, to try to think of something clever or funny or good to say. That is defeating the purpose of this exercise. The primary thing you must do is go fast. So that means when a question comes at you, open your mouth and start talking. Don't think about your answer. This also means don't censor yourself. Don't evaluate whether this answer is good or where it's going to lead. At its core, this game is an exercise in creativity. And what that means is, when you go fast, you want to tap into your subconscious creative power. Ideas are going to pop out that maybe you weren't ready for. That's a good thing. If you censor yourself and an idea comes up and you're like, oh, I don't know where that came from, you're actually cutting your creativity.
Right.
So you want to trust yourself, that subconscious you have, that when an idea comes up, it came up for a reason. So say that, which leads to the next tip, which is that keep talking. sometimes you feel like you can answer a question with a pretty simple answer. Like when you asked me who invented it, I could have stopped and said, well, Mr. Rice and Mr. Roney. Or just said, oh, Mr. Smith. Because that would have sufficiently answered your question.
Right, right.
But that's defeating the purpose of the game. So when you find yourself giving a very short, terse answer, follow it up with because. So if you had asked me what year, you asked me what year mm-hmm. was Rice Roney invented. Now that could have been a one-word answer, 1776. I followed that up with, that's why, or because.
Right. As a matter of fact, you actually, the 1776, like you said, triggered something. You said, oh, the Revolutionary War.
Exactly.
You allowed your sensor to not work. It fired at 1776, and that actually gave you a launching pad to go into an extended answer about the Revolutionary War.
Right, because when you said, when was it invented, my mind just started going through dates. And then you said, it became such an American thing, and the first date that popped into my head was 1776. And I didn't know why or where I was going, but then I just trusted my subconscious and kept flowing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely vital to developing the ability to play this game, is to go fast. Now, I said don't try to be funny, but if you trust yourself and go as fast as possible, what you'll find is that you will start generating some funny answers. If you trust yourself and keep going. You won't be very funny if you just say one-word answers, but if you just talk. And again, this is an exercise. Anyone listening at home, your goal here is not to play this game, although this is a performance-level game. Your goal right now is not to do it performance-level. So do it in the comfort of your home with someone you know or trust to just develop that ability to flow. A couple other things that will really help you with this. When you practice this, do it standing up. You'll feel tempted to do it seated because it's a little more comfortable, and you feel like you're more protected. When you're standing up, you're a little more exposed,
mm-hmm.
especially if your partner is sitting. Do it standing up because you're practicing to be a great speaker. That's the point of this. Most of the time, you're not going to deliver your presentation sitting down. So stand up when you play this game.
Right.
Act confident. And if you don't trust your creativity or don't like your ability to improvise, this is going to be the hardest one. But you got to fake that confidence. I'm sure, or I hope, as I played this game, that I sounded like I had 100% confidence in my answers.
Mm-hmm.
That I was the expert, and I know, and this is what I'm saying.
Right, right.
This is vital when we get to the application, that you develop that ability to speak with confidence, even when you're nervous, and even when you're uncertain. This game is designed, by definition, you're given a topic you're not an expert on. So it's designed for you to not
be able to speak
with real confidence.
Yeah, with confidence.
So it's a game in practicing it. Have energy. Be energetic. Again, this comes back to that confidence thing. If you're going to be wrong in this game and say something stupid, say it with gusto. Mm-hmm. You know, use that volume, project your voice, and just act like you are happy to be here. Remember, this game is called Expert Interview. You're the world's leading expert. So have energy. Practice getting to that point where you can say these things energetically. And you'll know you're really hitting on something when you start surprising yourself. That whole thing about trusting those your subconscious, trusting your creativity. When you get an answer and you surprise yourself, like, I don't know where that came from, that's when you know you're doing it right.
Right, right. That makes perfect sense.
And the final thing is, if you recruit people who aren't improvisers to be the ones asking you questions, they may have trouble being creative, coming up with questions. So remind them to stay open-ended, to say how or why, to ask you to tell stories. And they can use the same drill. They can listen to your answers and use that for their own creativity to come back with follow-up questions.
Right, right. These are all great tips to help to really bring out the most of this game. It seems like a really fun game, and I have a great time playing it. How would this then apply to speaking and to speakers?
Well, this game is amazing to me because when it comes to improv, this is one of the purest games that translates from improv comedy to speaking. I said earlier, the key to being a great speaker is to be yourself, and the key to great improv is to be yourself. This game does that by definition, if you're playing it right. If you're not trying to be funny, if you're just trusting your subconscious, because when you trust your creativity and let yourself flow, the stuff that's going to come out is the stuff that's deep inside of you. By definition, that's who you are.
Right.
So when you play this game, on one level, you are practicing being yourself. Because a lot of times we, as in all people, walk through life censoring ourselves. We got to watch what we say in front of our boss, in front of our friends, in front of our family, in front of our coworkers, in public. We're constantly censoring ourselves. So the real us a lot of times is buried within, which is what leads to a lot of midlife crises and social malaise and angst. And that's a topic for a whole other
set of
audio program. Yeah. But this is that first step exercise in really getting who you are out there. And because it's a performance game, it helps you practice being yourself in a performance environment, which whether you consider yourself an entertainer or just a have to speak for work, if you're standing up, speaking in front of people, on some level, it's a performance. So this first step helps you develop your ability to be yourself, and it helps you practice getting out there and being yourself.
Right, and that's actually what every speaker ultimately wants. I mean, everybody says, oh, they want to be well-known and well-respected and well-paid, but what they want to do, that caveat is, be well-known and well-respected and well-paid as themselves. No one wants to be another Tony Robbins for any extended period of time because Tony Robbins is not them. So this
exactly.
is coaching them to be successful as themselves.
And a lot of people will forget that. If you're listening to this with the goal of branching off and becoming a professional speaker, or if you are a professional speaker, a lot of people forget that because they see people who are successful and they try to copy them. And they forget the fact that the reason that person is successful is because they were themselves.
Right.
So that's why this exercise is absolutely vital. This game, in addition to giving you that practice, it's also very diagnostic in that it's a real great gauge of seeing where you are. When I do workshops for people as speakers, whether professional speakers or in a corporate environment, help people with their presentation skills, I use this game to see where people are. Because since you are, in general, pushed out of your comfort zone, if you never played this before, you are have so many things to think about. The how you act in terms of your voice and your body language is really who you are and where you are right now. So I would encourage you when you play this, for the people you've recruited to ask you questions, make sure they don't just ask you, but watch you. Get a third person, someone who is outside of the game, not playing the game and not asking questions, but just watching. Right. And a great thing to do is to videotape yourself and then watch it afterwards. You will be surprised because this is who you are when you're in front of a crowd. And if you're a person who is a little bit afraid of speaking and responds by absolutely memorizing a script word for word, stressing out, constantly going over it, this exercise is absolutely for you. Because when you watch yourself on tape or have somebody watch you, all of your nervous tics will be evident. You know, do you clasp your hands in front of you or behind you or stick them in your pocket?
Do you slouch?
Yeah. Do you lean back away? Do you keep your head down? All of these things will be so evident, come right to the forefront. And this comes back to that thing about being confident. If you're not projecting confidence, it'll be so obvious right away. And then as you practice this exercise, you'll get better and better at it. So when a wild card, crazy question comes at you, you'll naturally, automatically shift into a confident posture, confident voice, and say a great, great answer. So this, a lot of this is, are you being natural in how you're speaking?
Right, right.
And there's more.
But I'm not done yet.
Again, this watching yourself when you do this is vital because this is how you respond. So you may have a great speech memorized, but if something unexpected happens or somebody asks you a question, the presence you're putting up in this expert interview game is the presence you're going to put up when somebody asks you a question. So keep practicing it till you get to that state where it's natural for you to be confident and be out there. This is also, like I said, a creativity exercise at its core. This ability of going fast and just letting yourself flow, that's going to be really useful when you have to generate content. Whether you're doing it as a speaker, kind of writing stuff for a speech, or whether you're doing it as an author, writing articles or books or whatever.
Right.
This level of creativity, this is how you write first drafts. You just flow. So if you're writing a first, I do this sometimes when I'm developing a new section of my speech. Rather than sitting there and trying to think about it, I'll just stand up, think of the topic, and just start talking out loud at speed. And it's amazing the ideas that come out that would never have come out if you just sat there and tried to think about it.
Right.
Which, if you're really hesitant to play this game, you can do this by yourself. You can't ask yourself questions, but you can pick a topic and just try to talk for as long as possible on that topic. I remember, and I think you might have been there, we auditioned people for an improv group, and we would have them come in, and we'd give them a topic like cuckoo clocks or mattress tags and say, just start talking like an expert on this topic.
Right.
And they would have to just keep flow. And some people did it great, and some people sputtered out after 15 seconds. But all of their natural mannerisms came out. So you can do this on your own that way.
Right.
Another thing to practice as a speaker is get into it. When I said before to play the game right, have energy, throw yourself into a little bit. If you're going to talk about something serious, get serious. If you're going to talk, I mean in a joking way, but get serious.
Right.
If you're going to talk about something wild and energetic, get wild and energetic. This is a concept called acting out when it comes to speaking. And a little bit of putting some emotion in, putting some vocal variety in, putting some acting out in really helps your speech. This exercise will make it natural for you. And that's really what improv comedy is all about. Because you have no time to think and you respond immediately, by practicing these things, you'll make it so you automatically do all these things that make a great speaker great instead of having to rehearse them into your speech. And this stuff would be a lot more evident, like the body language and the confidence, if you could watch this. But you should gotten a good sense just listening. And obviously, on the Improv for Speakers DVDs, you can see me playing this game with a real example of how you can visualize the difference in the persona and how it looks to have somebody just busting out with a lot of confidence.
Right, right. These are all great attributes that a person should be bringing in to as a speaker. And one of the things you brought up, which was I wanted to follow up with, was you talked about the ability to flow with questions and interruptions as you're speaking about this. This exercise really brings out a lot of that. That probably is one of the most important things for a speaker to be able to do, to flow with the unexpected and also maintain your humorous composure and kind of personal expression. What other exercises do you think, or do you have any other exercises that would be good for enhancing that specifically?
Do I have other exercises? Of course. I got a great exercise, one of my favorites, and this is another performance level game. It's called Ding. This is a great game that helps you practice that ability to flow and shift gears and be very quick-witted, which everybody wants. And it also shows you how to, or it's going to actually help you develop your natural comedy, because you'll see how going to the unexpected is funny. So now we're going to play this game of Ding. And the way this game works is I'm going to tell a story. And it's a story I just make up right here on the spot. Now, in my hand, I have a bell. Hey. And I'm going to hand it over to you, Mike.
That's right.
And you know how to play this game, but I'm going to explain it to the listeners so they understand. What's going to happen is anytime Mike wants, he can ring that bell. When he does, I have to stop, go back, repeat what I said, but say something different. I can say anything at all as long as it's different. So for example, if I start out telling a story, once upon a time, there's a girl who had a pet dog. Once upon a time, there's a girl who had a pet cat, had a pet mouse, had a pet llama, whatever. It doesn't matter what I say as long as it's different. Every time Mike rings, I change it. When he stops ringing, I continue telling my story, but only as if the last thing was said. So in this story, the dog, the cat, and the mouse would all be gone, and we'd be left with a story about a girl and her pet llama.
Right.
So the story just flows around, and Mike, you can ring frequently or infrequently, however you like, and you can ring once or you can ring multiple times for each switch, and just we'll just go through it and give the listeners here an idea of how this works.
Sounds like a plan.
Are you ready?
Always.
Once upon a time, there's a man who had a fabulous job as a lawyer. He litigated cases for big corporations. He litigated cases for small businesses, and he helped them sue big companies so that they could make their money and stay in business. One day, he had a particularly difficult case. He had a really easy case. He had a growth on his nose, and he didn't know what it was, and so he got it checked out by a doctor. And the doctor says, this is a stress bulb, and you get these when you're working too hard. You get these when you are an incompetent lawyer. And the lawyer was taken aback because he's like, oh, I didn't realize that biology would know I'm an incompetent lawyer. And the doctor said, oh, your body knows everything. So what do I do? The lawyer asked the doctor. And the doctor said, well, you have to win a case, because the lawyer to this point had actually never won a case. So it was a fabulous job, but he never won. And this was trouble for him because the current case he was on was very, very difficult, was very overwhelming, was very far away, was in another galaxy. And he needed to get on a spaceship. So he's like, I don't even know how I'm going to get to this other galaxy, much less win this case. Fortunately, he had a cousin in Alabama who was developing wormhole transportation. So he went down and said, listen, I will pay you 50% of the proceeds that I get from this case. I will give you all the money I'll win. I will give you a hamburger today if you let me use your wormhole transporter on Tuesday. And the man said, absolutely sure, his cousin did. And so the man gave him a hamburger, and Tuesday he went through the wormhole to this other galaxy where he had a very interesting meeting with the aliens who his company was suing. And they agreed to settle for the sum of 100 million glutons, 100 million cat heads, 100 billion stars, which is all the stars in the universe. And the lawyer just said, fine, I'll take it, though I don't know how I'm going to transfer those stars into currency. All right. I forgot to mention that these stories really don't end.
Because are we going to stop at this critical narrative juncture?
Yes. You'll have to tune in next week to hear the story of the lawyer and his trip to the galaxies. So, yeah, the stories don't end because since the story keeps shifting direction, anytime you start to move towards a conclusion, all of a sudden you're off in a new direction. But again, the point of that is not to tell a complete story from start to finish, but rather to give you an idea, an example of how to play that game.
Right, exactly. So the general flow makes a lot of sense, but there's always some tips and things to think about. What tips should you give to people who are going to try this at home?
Well, the primary one, relatively similar to the expert interview exercise, is that you got to go fast. And in this game, that translates to not hesitating. As a listener, and if you have to back it up to hear that again, you can take another listen and realize that as soon as that bell rang, I started talking. I guarantee you, if you haven't done this, or even if you have, I've seen improvisers with 10, 20 years of experience still not play this game properly because the bell will ring and they'll hesitate. You know, once upon a time, there's a girl who had a pet dog. Ding. Once upon a time, there's a girl who had a pet cat.
Right.
And that hesitation is deadly in this game, especially in a performance level, but even just in a practicing level. So you have to switch immediately and eliminate hesitation. Now, that's going to take practice. You want to keep practicing this exercise till you can switch on a dime. The reason that's important is because this comes down to your mentality. People who improvise and deal with the unexpected well are the ones who stay in the moment. When something happens, they are in the moment and they say, right now, boom, what can I do to handle this? People who struggle are the ones who are wrapped up in the future. And when something unexpected happens, all they can think about is how the future is different now. How are they going to get to that future?
Right.
Totally messes them up. That translates in this game to when you're telling a story, if you are in the moment when the bell rings, you just switch. But if you're caught up in where the story is headed, when the bell rings, you got to mentally backtrack from where you thought the story was going. Which is the next tip to playing this game. As soon as that bell rings, you have to let go of whatever previous idea you had about the story.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in this story, I started out with an idea about a lawyer who's going to be doing something with big corporations.
Right.
Well, you rang the bell, and I didn't really try to weave it back too strongly. It came back a little bit later, but immediately I just let it go and said, let me just flow with where the story goes. And that's the key to improvising with the unexpected. It's not being afraid of moving in a new direction. Now, I invite listeners to once again listen to the story again, because when it got funny is when I moved into new ground. And this is a really good tip for the person ringing the bell, because you're going to need someone to ring that bell for you, is ring the bell multiple times to get the person onto a new train of thought. So you did this real well a couple of times, because I said, I could say something like, oh, he worked for a big corporation or worked for a small corporation. Well, that you let go, and it moved the story in a new direction. But then there was another time where I think I said something along the lines of
It started off with very innocent. It was a big case that he was worried about. It was overwhelming, and then I dinged a couple
Right, and then it was in another galaxy.
Right.
So I could have just kept trying to use a different adjective. It was a big case. It was a small case. It was an important case. It was a difficult case. It was a challenging case. It was an impossible case.
Staying within your comfort zone.
Right.
Staying safe.
All of a sudden, I'm in a new galaxy. That makes the story, oddly enough, interesting. That added the humor because it's surprising. Really, because comedy comes from a few places. One of the main ones is surprise. And if you stay within that realm of what's already known, like that big, challenging, difficult, impossible, it's not funny because you're staying in the same realm. It's when you move into a new realm that surprise happens. So this game teaches you to start thinking and pushing yourself beyond. And hopefully it gets you accepting that, because a lot of this just comes down to what you believe inside. A lot of people are so afraid of moving into new ground, just like that expert interview game. You got to be willing to move into new territory. And to help you practice that, you need someone ringing the bell that's going to not let you get off the hook by just slightly changing an adjective, but essentially telling the same story.
Right.
And you want to practice game till you get to a point where you don't fear the bell. Where when you tell your story, when someone new is playing this game, and or like I said before, even experienced people, I've seen them reluctant to play this game because they're like afraid of that change. And I've seen people literally, you can see it in their face, they're frustrated when you ring the bell. They're like annoyed at you for changing their train of thought.
Like you're an enemy or you're trying to antagonize them.
And this is probably the train of thought most people have, because they like their little plans and the preset ideas, and when something comes along and changes it, it messes them up. Well, that is the opposite of improvising. People who improvise effectively deal with the unexpected powerfully. And so you want to get to a point where you don't fear the bell. Where, in fact, I'm at a point where I get annoyed when people don't ring enough.
Right.
Because I know that that's what's going to make the story fun. And you just got to get to that mental place and practice it. In advanced technique, once you start getting comfortable with just switching on a dime and taking the story in new directions, is this idea of reincorporating. So what that means is if I introduce a story element early and then the bell takes me in a totally new direction, if at some point I can tie it back to an earlier idea, that's called reincorporation, and that suddenly makes the story much tighter. And watch any good story, any good movie, and you'll see this happen. A lot of times this is called foreshadowing, where you'll set something up early, which is tied in later.
Right.
As improvisers, we don't have the foresight or the ability to know what's coming later, so we fake foreshadowing by, as the story is being told, tying back in earlier elements.
Ah, right, right.
Now, you're not going to... When you're doing a speech, you're not going to make your stories up as you go. But what this will do is this, by practicing this reincorporation, it'll train you to automatically be a better storyteller. Because your mind will start looking for connections, and connections is what really makes stories work. Mm-hmm. And as a speaker, this comes down to making things important as well. But the main thing is just to keep practicing this till you can go fast. When that bell rings, there is no hesitation. And what I tell people to do when I'm coaching them is just open your mouth and start talking. And you'll say, well, I don't have anything to say. Yes, you do. You may not know what it is, but just start saying words.
Right.
And if literally nothing comes out, keep practicing that until eventually you start babbling, eventually you start saying words. Break down those walls and barriers that are holding you back till you can just switch on a dime. It's going to make you a great improviser, and it's going to help you tap into your natural humor as well.
Right. That makes a lot of – and that's actually something that I think speakers are afraid of, is the idea of, I won't have anything to say. You do have something to say. It's just sometimes it's a little scary because you don't know what it's going to be. And
exactly.
You just have to trust yourself and say, it's going to be okay, whatever I say, because mm-hmm. it's my stuff.
Exactly.
You know, this is one of the aspects I wanted to ask about how people can use this game to become a better speaker. I mean, one of the things it allows them to do is to get over their fear of what content they're generating. Are there other aspects that this game can enhance in for speakers?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you were me, you would use this game to open your speeches.
What a concept.
But I do, though. I tell you, it's a performance game. This is how I open my speeches, and the bell becomes a metaphor for unexpected changes in life. And if you're listening, I don't want you to do that because that's my thing, so don't steal that from me.
Right. It's copyright or exactly. Something.
Well, it's mine. But no, this is, I'm not telling you to use this in your speech. But this game is really powerful. Number one, this game trains you to be quick-witted, how to think quickly on your feet, because it conditions that response. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to the earlier question you had about some improvisers still aren't good speakers, it's how you train. You got to train this game properly. You got to break down those walls so that you respond immediately. But once you get to a point where you don't fear the bell and you can immediately, without hesitation, switch and change on a dime, you are pretty much by definition becoming a quick-witted person. So practice that to make you quick-witted. This is what allows you to flow with the unexpected, because what happens is when that bell rings, when you play this game effectively, you train that mentality to automatically let go of what you were thinking before and put your attention immediately on the here and now, which is why people can't deal with the unexpected. They don't do this. If you have an hour for your speech, which a lot of professional speakers do, but the conference is running behind schedule and they say, hey, can you cut it to 45 minutes? A lot of people get frustrated and thrown because they're like, oh, and they start complaining like, oh, I was told an hour, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
The powerful ones are the ones who immediately say, okay, boom, fine.
Right.
How can I deal with this? And this game trains it and makes that response automatic. You automatically switch to what's going on here and now. This game, to me, the ability to play this will increase your confidence. In the first game, the expert interview game, we talked about faking your confidence, taking on that posture, speaking with a lot of volume, speaking with energy to act confident. This game, to me, helps you develop real confidence. Because one of the reasons people are insecure is because you don't know what's going to happen. How are people going to react? Are they going to hate me? Is someone going to heckle? Are they going to ask me questions I don't know? Are they going to boo me? What this game trains you to do is it trains your mind to respond to the unexpected powerfully and immediately. And the more you practice this and get better at that, the less you fear uncertainty. Because you start developing that ability to say, no matter what happens, I'll deal with it. And when you combine this game with the expert interview game and, again, the application, think of it in terms of dealing with the uncertain, you become really confident. And this transformed my professional life and also personal, social, everything. Once I realized that I'm an improviser, and even going into situations that make me nervous that, hey, I know I have the creativity, the tools, the resources, and the mindset to deal with it, fear really suddenly started to go away. And that helped in any area that I've become more successful in, that fear has gone away because of that.
Right, right, right.
And at an advanced level, that storytelling thing we talked about. When you can start automatically reincorporating, you'll automatically become a good storyteller. You'll understand storytelling principles. So when you have to tell a story, whether it's a keynote story that goes on for 15 minutes in a conference speech.
Just a dinner party and your wife's friends, yeah.
Exactly. You understand the setup, the building, how to move a story forward, because this game is killer in a bad way if you don't move the story forward.
It gets dull really fast.
Exactly. So you develop all these abilities that really come out. And you can even practice this with your speech. You can practice telling your speech and having somebody throw you and force yourself to switch directions in your speech itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that, oh, wow, what if... I mean, and if you can do that in this game with a bell, then you'll easily respond to a cell phone or a question at a point you weren't expecting it.
Exactly. And, of course, you realize that both Avish and I are available to be those ball busters for $350 an hour plus transportation costs. We'll happily sit in your living room and press the ding bell for multiple times.
Exactly. We'll just ring that bell for you perfectly. So, also, what I like about that reincorporation concept on an advanced level is that it trains you to make things matter. Because when you drop a line now and then later on in the story reincorporate it, you're saying, hey, what I said earlier matters now. And to me, in speaking, this is important. Because we've seen speakers who kind of get off on a tangent and then they kind of come back to the original point. But they never explained what the point of that tangent was. By practicing this game and then getting to an advanced level, you're practicing that reincorporation. You're conditioning your mind to always tie elements together, to make sure that everything you say is tied into a point, matters somewhere down the line, which is what makes some of the most powerful speakers so powerful. They tie everything together.
Right.
So not only is this one of the most fun games you can play and watch, but it'll train you to be quick-witted. It'll develop your own humor because, like we said, moving that unexpected territory is what makes things interesting. It's what make things funny. It'll build your confidence. It'll build your energy. And it'll make you a better storyteller. All of things which are totally valuable for speakers.
Right, exactly. So Avish, you've given us a lot of great information about the structures that you can use to build your improvisational experience, which will help make you a better speaker. Just to kind of encapsulate and recap what you've just said, can you just kind of summarize what we've gone through on this interview?
Sure. Of course, the overall purpose of this audio program is to show how and why improv comedy is a really powerful tool for speakers to use. It's better than acting or taking a speaking class per se, or at least a speaking class where they really try to dictate how you move and whatnot, because it's really about being yourself, which if you're doing improv in the right way, that's really what you're achieving is being yourself. Right. It'll help you float the unexpected. It'll help your humor. It'll help your stage presence, your delivery, your storytelling, and your ability to generate content. But you have to train the right way. If you're going to do improv, you have to build the right improv mentality. You have to have the right application. and you have to really think about how these principles will help you and put them into the speaking arena. And we did two games, both of which are great, fun games to play, but really useful also in helping you diagnose where you are right now when it comes to improvising, but also help you develop the skills. One was the expert interview, mm-hmm. where I gave a lot of tips on how to play that better and how to apply it, but some of the big ones were to go fast, to not criticize yourself or censor your ideas, and to have a lot of energy and confidence. And the second one was Ding, which was a storytelling game with a bell. And again, a lot of tips on how to play it and a lot of ideas on how to apply it. But the primary ones being get rid of that hesitation, get rid of that fear, stay in the moment, and be able to switch on a dime. And those skills that allow you to move into new territory will help you flow with the unexpected and be funnier as you go. Mm-hmm. Now, practice those two exercises. It'll be really helpful. Get other people. You can play the expert interview, like I said, by yourself by just talking about a topic that you assign yourself to. And the Ding game is a little bit harder to play by yourself, but you can practice a little bit, tell a story, just try to switch, try to go into completely new territory. That one's really easier with a partner, but you can pretend to do that. But the more you practice, the better you'll get. An additional way to practice, obviously, is to go to an improv group and take a class with them or even join. And if you type in improv comedy and whatever city you're in or whatever big cities nearby into something like Google or a web browser, you'll probably find a list of improv comedy groups.
Sure.
Now, you got to be careful. I can't vouch for them. Just like there are good and bad speakers and good and bad music composers, there are good and bad improv groups. So you have to... I would go see some of their shows and see the talent level and see the personalities. And a lot of them offer classes. And try them out. But also, remember what I said earlier, that a lot of improv people, even really talented ones, teach from the level of technique. Because they never learned how to do all that inner stuff. They might have done it naturally. So they don't teach that. So either you got to find a teacher that's going to teach you that stuff, or when you're taking classes, you have to bring that to the class yourself and really work on being yourself, because that's where you're going to get the real value. So find a good improv group, play around with them. I think it's really helpful. Now, obviously, I think one of the best ways to use improv comedy to become a better speaker is my Improv for Speakers program. It's a 3-DVD set. And again, that's Improv, IMPROV, 4, FOR, Speakers, SPEAKERS, .com. It's a 3-DVD set. It has about 20, 21 improv comedy games, just like the two we played here today. Mm-hmm. Now, this is video, so you see all the visual stuff as well. And just like we did here today, it covers the how to play the game, a demonstration of the game, and then all the applications, how to use those principles. So whether you're taking a class or not, I think this is a useful thing because it helps you tie it in. But it's the only thing I know that's out there that really shows you how to apply improv ideas to speaking. So those are some resources. I hope I've convinced everyone. I hope I had convinced you in advance. But I hope I've convinced everyone listening that improv comedy is really a lot more than just making jokes and being funny. It's got really powerful life skills. It's got tremendous value and application for anyone who wants to be a great speaker. If you just put in the time, practice it properly, focus on the applications, you can go very far. So, Mike, I want to thank you for interviewing me.
Of course, my pleasure.
And once again, remember, if you want any music, anything like that, sound work, custom music made for your film or TV projects, check out MikeWorthMusic.com. That's MikeWorthMusic.com. And again, improvforspeakers.com or my name, avishparashar.com, AvishParashar.com for more information about some of the stuff I do. Thank you again, Mike. And thank you for listening. And go forth, play some improv, be a great speaker, and we'll check you on the next one.